Friends of DeSoto, if you've been too embarrassed to see a live Greatest Gen show, now is your chance, because we're bringing a live show directly to you. It's the Streaming Cyboctacular, our live show about Star Trek V, and it's a riot. May 16th is when it comes out, and that night, you get to join me and Ben and a bunch of Friends of DeSoto to watch it together. There's a live chat, there's merch, there's a ton of embarrassment to go around. And don't worry, if you have something better going on that night, that's fine, because you should still get a ticket. That stream will be running through the end of May. GreatestGenTour.com to buy your ticket now to watch our streaming live show. It's almost the most embarrassing thing you can do in the privacy of your own home. GreatestGenTour.com.
My friends, the great experiment.
Down on the Lord, thanks, thanks.
Hit it. Trick, trick.
Would you look at that?
The greatest trick, trick.
Astronauts are some kind of star
trek.
Welcome to Greatest Trek. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison, recording live on tape from a hotel room in Chicago.
I don't mind shouting out the name, the Royal Sonesta, a hotel chain I'd never heard of before today.
I looked at their website because I was like, is this really a chain? Like, what? I've never heard this either. And they also operate a river cruise in Egypt. You can take a Royal Sonesta, like, sailboat cruise of the Nile.
What you want to do is diversify the portfolio. And that's what they're doing.
They've got one hotel in Chicago and one weird boat in Egypt.
We're staying here because we got... You know, like when you do a wedding, you get the room block at the hotel for your guests.
Yeah.
This is one of the rare live shows we're doing where the venue like had rates at a hotel. And Chicago is fucking expensive.
It is fucking expensive. We've really taken it on the chin a couple of times on our stays in Chicago on past tour shows. And when you do a live show, you get an email that's like the advance email that you go over all the technical requirements, you send them your W-9 so that they can pay you, a bunch of other stuff goes on. And this one, they included like four or five links to hotels and they get like a preferred client rate at these local hotels. I don't think I've ever seen this happen in another show advance. And I've been advancing our shows for, you know, since we've been going on tour.
We've been touring for time immemorium, and this is the first time this happened.
Yeah, like 5 years in, we get a fucking break on the room rate.
Well, I'll tell you one thing: the Royal Sonesta gets a break on the light bulb costs because darkest hallways in the hotel game. That's the brand promise of the Hotel Sonesta.
I keep having this thing where I leave my room to like go get a bucket of ice or go. You know, go out and get a cup of coffee or something. And there's always somebody in the hallway that's asking if I want service on my room, but I can't see them. So it's just like somebody like yelling at me from, you know, dozens of yards away.
That's creepy.
Like down a dark hallway going, sir, excuse me. And I'm like, ah, what?
That's that person's job, is to just stand in the hallway and yell at you.
Yeah.
To see if you want a vacuum in your room or something.
Yeah. I need to stop leaving my room with my headphones in. At this place.
You do. It's too dark for that.
I need to keep my head on a swivel.
Yeah. It's like when you leave your hotel room, it's the dark corner on a city street where the street lights out. Mm-hmm. That's how it feels.
You're like, how dangerous could this possibly be? Ah, somebody's trying to clean my room.
I'm on the 39th floor. There's a parked car up here. That used to be a thing at like Bananas Republic, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Like in the 90s, they'd actually have like a Jeep parked in there.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever happened to car as decoration for a place?
Banana Republic used to be like safari themed.
Yeah.
And now it's just like...
Now it's business safari, am I right?
I think the theme is sad desk salad.
It is. That's really like, that's the promise of a technical business garment that goes unmentioned. Like, look, you can spill your coffee on it or whatever, but what I want to see is like a dressed leaf of salad.
Oh, yeah.
Dropped onto a pant leg.
I want to see what happens when a pickled beet that is slathered in balsamic vinaigrette lands on my groin.
Just a super close-up composition of a lumpy groin and a leaf like slapping on it, like a heavy leaf.
I've shot some corporate video stuff for Gap Inc. I shot their like quarterly business report video one year. Mm-hmm. If I were ever to land a gig shooting a television commercial for Banana Republic, we would rig up some kind of like t-shirt cannon or similar to fire single discs of pickled beets with balsamic vinaigrette on them at a crotch. And the whole video would just be this crotch thrusting the discs away like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. And the fabric, pristine.
I'm shocked that this wasn't a professional avenue for you.
I pitched some of my best ideas to these people. They never see the vision.
It's too
I'm
bad.
I'm not a good salesman.
Yeah.
I'm a good director. I'm not a good salesman.
If only you could have convinced them psychically that these were good ideas.
Yeah. If only my mind state was quite as infectious as I wish it was.
Yeah. And that brings us to today's episode, doesn't it?
I suppose it does.
Like mental chicken pox, there's an outbreak on the Cerritos. Let's get into this episode, Ben. It's Star Trek Lower Decks, Season 4, Episode 5. Empathological fallacies?
You know the greatest danger facing us is an irrational fear of the unknown. Unknown.
Black alert.
Unknown.
Black alert.
Again, no cold open. We have done away with the cold open.
At this point, I don't want cold opens anymore.
You don't want a little joke before your title sequence?
Did it seem like they added to the space battle this episode?
Ooh, I wasn't paying super close attention.
It seemed like it was less of a skirmish and more of a full-on firefight out there.
Huh. I wonder if that
I mean, I'm not keeping score, but I probably should be by now.
I wonder if that ship that keeps vaporizing everybody will be in that battle at some point.
Yeah, it seems like it could really clean up the mess.
Who do you think wins, whale probe or tilt ship?
I think it's whale probe, and it's not even close.
Yeah, whale probe kills everybody.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so we're getting a T-Lin's log, or it's not even really a log. It's like a report slash letter back to her commanding officer in the Vulcan equivalent of Starfleet.
Like, I know this has been possible for a long time, but like, have you or would you ever write an email using Siri or something, like to just dictate it? This is what T-Lin's doing.
Yeah. I've done it for text messages while I'm driving, which does not feel less dangerous somehow. Like, it feels as distracting as like...
Yeah, you're not thinking about driving.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to say is I'm unsafe at any speed.
Car still in the shop?
I'm getting it back next week.
Hey, that's great.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
But yeah, she's helping to babysit some Betazoid Woo girls.
Despite the crew's enthusiasm, I find the Betazoid's exuberance disruptive.
So it turns out Luoxana Troi was not an anomaly among Betazoid ambassadors. They are party animals. They get yards of cocktail and go from fun party planet to fun party planet, enjoying fancy dinners and having giant busty dresses.
The one thing I recognized from this scene and this entire episode is that it doesn't get more annoying the more Luoxana types you add to a situation. Like, it's already pinned. Like, you could add one or two or 1,000 more, and it's still just as annoying. And I think the type of annoying is, like, if you are the latest person to arrive at a party where everyone's already drunk or whatever. Like, yeah. You're just on that, you're not on that wavelength, are you?
And it doesn't really feel like there's a possibility to catch up.
Yeah.
And
you'd need to drink a lot of hoof to catch up, and no one's got the appetite for that.
I was shocked that there was not a pink zebra hoof in this episode.
Maybe they don't know us like we had assumed.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't care.
Maybe they don't care.
Maybe they know that the purple zebra's closed on the Cerritos and this is some other...
Oh, shit.
Some other stand.
Wow, yeah. Purple zebra's only open from 1:30 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturdays.
Peep this itinerary. These three Betazoids were on Angel One for 3 weeks before this.
I don't believe this.
And they are on their way to Risa.
this is, I mean, you have a 3-night limit on Vegas. These three go way harder than you.
These dresses don't cover the backs, right? Because they are blown the fuck out.
They are a bunch of sexy drunks, and this is an Uber mission.
I'm proud to shuttle a bunch of sexy drunks around.
We are catching up with them in the hallway where they're just kind of, you know, bringing their party wherever they set their feet. Loved seeing Ransom just step on the rake of trying to get with Cthu and failing immediately for not being hard enough to get.
He stepped on a rake with his butt cheeks.
That's what I'm talking about.
The cartoonish depiction of like the credit card prank move using the Yard O'Rita as a thing was hilarious to me. Like, someone put in the work artistically
of animating that
to put Yard O'Marg through Ransom's butt cheeks.
Mm-hmm. Does Nelly get a kickback from that? Like, is that like intellectual property where they do have to like license the use of credit card in butt crack technology?
Ransom's got to know better. He's got to play that cooler, right?
Yeah, he really does.
No one's playing it cool this episode, and it really starts here.
Yeah. So the three diplomats are Cthu, Dolorix, and Catrat. Were the names I wrote down?
I had a hard time with these names.
Yeah. So they send T-Lin off to get them more glowing green drinks. I noticed that there were glowing blue drinks when she showed back up.
Oh?
T-Lin fucked up. That wasn't what they ordered.
I mean, if they were the color of like Baja Blast or whatever, that's like between green and blue.
Right.
But these were not that. These were straight green.
They were light blue when she came back. I think they have green drinks at the beginning, but
oh God.
Yeah.
I fucking blew that.
Yeah. I mean, but T-Lin, we find out, doesn't partake, so maybe T-Lin doesn't know from drinks. But she knows from colors. She's got to be able to see colors. Are Vulcans like dogs?
I don't know.
Limited color range?
We're asking more questions than providing answers.
Well,
our show is not academic.
One question I never thought to ask was, would Dr. Katz,
her name is Dr. Tana,
like to eat a betazoid if it was allowed? And the answer, it turns out, is yes.
Yeah.
Ah, I didn't realize there was going to be a buffet today.
Everybody has a good sense of humor about this.
Is this new canon, or have we always known that that the Katz people eat the betazoids?
It seemed like new canon to me. It was news to me, I'll say.
Yeah.
But like, it's water under the bridge. Like, the betazoids aren't super busted up about it. It's okay for Dr. Katz to make jokes about it in a way that, like, even if like the oppression has ended, the person identified with the group of the former oppressor shouldn't usually make these jokes, but Dr. Katz does it freely and the betazoids all think it's fun and cool.
Everyone's great. Yeah. Everyone's over it.
Everybody's totally gotten over it.
Now we only eat synthetic betazoid.
Over in the Cerritos bar, the party continues as T-Lin narrates her letter. And by the end of it, we learn that she's writing this in order to get reinstatement onto her old ship with her old crew. And she kind of signs off with like a sad promise to be better, to do better, to not be the officer that they kicked out. And she can't send the message, and it's not because she can't emotionally bring herself to send the message. She hits that button a lot.
Yeah.
The message just isn't going through.
We learn from Mariner, who pokes her head in, that comms are extremely limited due to the high-priority ambassadors they have on board. So T-Lin's not going to be able to send this for a little while. Yeah, it's an interesting letter, because it's like Vulcans are not dance around the thing they want and try to ask it without asking it types.
Mm-hmm.
T-Lin is like, it's only logical for you to reinstate me. Like, you will inevitably conclude upon reading this letter that I need to come back, is basically the text that she's sending.
I don't think there's anything about the first half of her letter that's compelling in the way that she thinks it is, because like, this is supposed to be punishment.
Yeah.
She's supposed to be over here and it's supposed to be bad for her. And her description of all the ways that it's bad for her, I don't think is going to move that needle at all.
Yeah, the Vulcans are going to be like, that sounds like it sucks ass, exactly the way we hoped it would.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mariner is really trying to get Teal'c to go join the party, and Teal'c is not into it.
The greatest trick.
We cut over to Boimler and Rutherford's quarters, and Boimler is trying to memorize the names of every person on the crew, like with visual aids, like flashcards on an iPad.
Like, this is what Facebooks used to be before Facebook.
I wish I had one of these just for my life.
Yeah, yeah. It would be great. I am so bad at this, and I feel like it is like a real like successful person thing to be good at. Like, hey, good to see you again, Adam. Like, I learned your name once, and it stuck to me perfectly.
I think also, though, like a lot of people overstate how meaningful that is. Like, that's a sign of a successful person and a go-getter. But when someone remembers my name, and I've only met them once, like years ago, I kind of think it's weird and creepy. I don't ascribe like goodness or go-getterness to it.
Yeah, but at the same time, like I feel like if you met George Clooney at a party and then like he saw you
he could do
2 years later and he was like, "Hey Adam, nice to see you." You'd be like, "Oh my God! Clooney remembered my name."
Anytime I hear George Clooney's name mentioned, I have to also mention that great Esquire story of that writer who shit his pants on his white couch doing the interview with him.
You shit on my house!
And how fucking cool George Clooney was about that.
I don't remember this. That sounds great.
You got to look it up. It's like a long form profile of George Clooney. I think it was written like 10 years ago. But the story within the story is the author going through some things. And it's tremendous.
Wow. What a brave thing to publish.
Yeah. Yeah. So Rutherford's being a bro here, comforting him about, look, man, like you're never going to memorize this stuff. Why don't you just go to the party?
Just take it easy. Take a page from the Greatest Tech Playbook. If you hear somebody's name is Merp, assume it's Murph and don't worry about getting
it
right.
Lean into it hard.
Bonus!
And Boimler kind of wants to treat the party as a reward for memorization, so he's going to stay behind. Rutherford fucks off, goes into the corridor, and real secret-like, blurps in a message to Shax.
I love the way Rutherford falls into shadow when he steps into the frame to make this call. Like it's suddenly dark and semi-sinister when he says that he's got a potential candidate for the program.
I mean, this is a art style they did to him back when there was that mystery storyline about evil Rutherford.
Right.
I love it.
I think it's great. Red Eye Rutherford, RSVP. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like you said about showing up at a party where everybody's already drunk, Teal'c like works herself up into a, I can't send this message, but it would be logical to go ask when I can, and shows up at the party serving Sober October while everybody else is like New Year's Eve-ing it.
It's a riot in there.
I love everyone and everything.
And this is a scene like a lot of scenes like it in this episode that really rewards some scrutiny to the background. There's a lot of things going on in every scene.
I really thought we were going to get some Boimler gape based on where this episode started to head at this point.
Do you think you have to do a baryon sweep to the bar after that one episode with the fuck fest?
Yeah, probably.
You have to, right?
Yeah. It sort of seems like Freeman and Teal'c are the two that aren't partied out. Like Freeman seems like frazzled and fucked up, but not out of control in a way that many of the others are.
Captain Freeman! I didn't know Starfleet had this kind of party in them.
We don't.
The Trill Girl is going to go like change their course to slow them down so that they can laissez-les bon temps rouler. And like Teal'c has to Vulcan neck pinch her to stop that.
It's crazy that she's permitted to do this without comment.
I mean, the captain is desperate to get this party over with because the captain is stressed about it.
Have you ever gotten up onto a bar and stood on it to do a thing or say a thing or stage dive?
I have never coyoted ugly.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah. I don't think I'm hot enough, you know? Like, I think you have to be really hot to do that.
Yeah, you're not hot enough.
Nobody not hot gets away with standing on a bar.
As soon as you put a foot up onto a bar, like not having gone all the way up there, someone would stop you.
Yeah, sorry, sir. This is for hotties only. Only baddies need apply to get up on this bar.
No one is stopping. Like, Freeman gets their attention, but her... I mean, if they're even orders, which I don't think they are, like, they just fall on deaf ears.
Yeah.
Hey, just stop that! You can't move your captain! Good God! Why do I even care?
So you would think that this was starting to turn into a bit of a security situation, but Shax is nowhere to be found because he's down in some secret part of the ship that Boimler has never been to, leading him to quote-unquote the program. Boimler's excited, trying to imagine what this is going to be. Is it going to be some kind of like secret spy training or what?
The dream is like the Wayne's World door of like opening it up and there's like a ninja army back there training, right? That's what he's thinking it's going to be.
Yeah, yeah. Or a red match, you know?
Yeah.
Sunkatse?
But instead, it's like a security department speakeasy.
Yeah, and... not the fun, like, drinky kind of speakeasy. Mm-hmm. It's the poetry slam kind of speakeasy.
Did you feel like this was at all related to the A story in that, like, it had any relationship to the psychosis going around the ship?
It felt like it was a way to get Boimler and his gape away from the psychosis and to let it run rampant a little bit before security tried to get on top of it.
Of all of the callbacks this show does, to not make Boimler's thing his gape, probably good restraint, right?
I guess so. I wouldn't have that kind of restraint if I was in Mike McMahon's shoes. But up in the party, T'Lynn starts to speculate that the crew is going wild with Xanthi fever, which is the disease that Lwaxana brought to Deep Space Nine on the Peldor Joy episode.
Right.
What are you looking at me for?
That was the one that famously had Jake crushing on Major Kira.
Yeah, which really just called into question what was Jake doing before he started crushing on Major Kira, because everybody that sees Major Kira has a crush on her, right?
Yeah, that seems like that would just feel normal on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, this is like not a plot point.
Because for some reason... Jake Sisko.
It's me, Jake.
Freeman doesn't want to believe it for diplomatic reasons, right? Like, she's got her eye on the mission prize.
Right. And yet, like, if you're keeping your eye on the mission prize, you would think that you would be doing as much diplomacy to these ambassadors as possible. But she is so blunt with them at this point. She's like, yeah, T'Lynn says you got this fever. You got to go to Six Bay and get checked out for it. And we go into like telepathic audio, like of the Zoids communicating with each other. And they start talking about if their cover is blown.
Yeah.
What mean?
Did you understand Freeman's deal to be just as affected as everyone else? And this is the way she presents her version of this psychosis. She didn't seem that different from the way a captain would be during a situation like this.
The frazzledness, like they draw like the extra messiness into her hair.
Yeah.
And I feel like her behavior is a little bit more stressed out than normal.
Yeah.
But I feel like Freeman is always pretty stressed out just as a baseline. Mm-hmm. So it didn't quite read to me like why Freeman was reacting really differently from everybody else.
One thing that's running in the background here and through every other scene is that, like, you can't really radio for help because their radio silence is functional. Like, they don't want to get blown up by this mystery ship we've seen in the cold opens.
Yeah, everybody's scared of the mystery ship.
We need to score a lot of land fast.
Unlicensed businessmen.
We've all been there. We found something really great that we want to buy on the internet. We get to that page where it's like, put in your credit card details, and you're like, ah, man, my wallet's in the other room. And you set your phone down. 2 days later, you realize, dang, I didn't get that thing because it was not convenient to fill out the form at the time and place when I wanted to. Don't let your website fall into this same trap. You want it to be super easy to accept all kinds of payments. PayPal, Apple Pay, and even pay later options like Afterpay. Well, Squarespace can help you build a website that lets you make checkout seamless for your customers. And it's going to look great on all kinds of devices because Squarespace has some of the best web design software in the game. So go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek and you'll get 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
We need to talk. It's been a while, right? We should probably catch up. And we can really do that, because when you buy a VIP ticket to the streaming Cyboctacular, we'll get to talk, face-to-face. Think of it like a Zoom call, except funny. On the show, we tell a lot of funny and embarrassing stories, and this is your chance to share your embarrassing Star Trek story with me and Ben. But maybe you don't have an embarrassing story, and you're so cool. That's fine. We'll still be together, where we can say whatever we want, looking at each other during. Maybe you have a favorite bit you want to come back, or a pet you want to introduce us to. You could be doing this call from a weird shed filled with metal hooks hanging from the ceiling, like we saw that one time. Can you beat the shed with the metal hooks? Let's find out. But it's not a contest. It's just a chill hang with you and me and Ben. And if you want to do it as a group, you can. Get a few FODs together in that shed filled with hooks, and we'll have a great time. At the Streaming Cyboctacular, tickets for the show and the meet and greet are now on sale at greatestgentour.com.
Soundheap with John-Luke Roberts is a real podcast made up of fake podcasts. Like, if you had a cupboard in your lower back, what would you keep in it?
So I'm going to say mugs.
A little yogurt and a spoon.
A small handkerchief that was given to me by my grandmother on her deathbed.
Maybe some spare honey.
I'd keep batteries in it. I'd pretend to be a toy.
If I had a cupboard in my lower back, I'd probably fill it with spines.
If you had a cupboard in your lower back, what would you keep in it? Doesn't exist. We made it up for Soundheap with John-Luke Roberts, an award-winning comedy podcast from Maximum Fun, made up of hundreds of stupid podcasts. Listen and subscribe to Soundheap with John-Luke Roberts now.
Oh my gosh, hi, it's me, Dave Holmes, host of the pop culture game show Troubled Waters. On Troubled Waters, we play a whole host of games, like one where I describe a show using limerick, and our guests have to figure out what it is. Let's do one right now. What show am I talking about? This podcast has game after game, and brilliant guests who come play them. The host is named Dave. It could be your fave, so try it. Life won't be the same.
Big Business, starring Bette Midler and Lily Tomlin.
Close, but no.
Oh, is it Troubled Waters, the pop culture quiz show with all your favorite comedians?
Yes, Troubled Waters is the answer
to this question and all of my life's problems.
Now, legally, we actually can't guarantee that. But you can find it on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, there's a new ship. She's got the right name. She's got the right name. Now you remember that, you hear? Now you remember that, you hear?
Party's over and they go to the six bay and start scanning and, you know, more opportunities for Dr. Katz to make I want to eat these people jokes, and they get a clean bill of health. They do not have Xanthi fever.
Which is a disappointment, right?
Yeah, that would have been, you know, episode over at that point.
Mm-hmm.
All you need is a broad spectrum antiviral and a little sip of pee-pee.
You can't block the door on three drunk Betazoids.
Yeah.
Because their lipstick turns into police batons. Everyone knows that.
Yeah. And they rip off their big skirts and reveal themselves to be BIA officers who will sooner die than allow themselves to be taken captive by the Federation.
They kick a lot of ass.
They really do. I thought it would have been nice if their high heels had also like flattened out for more tactical effectiveness, because they're doing a lot of like flip kicks and stuff. And I felt like they could, you know, just save themselves some like ankle injuries over the long haul. If they're, you know, like the lipstick extends, it telescopes out, the high heel telescopes in.
Yeah, it would be like the Inspector Gadget montage, like every time. Doesn't his car change into a spy car or something?
Probably.
Wasn't that a sequence to that show?
Yeah. I could never figure out when that show was on. I wanted to be a fan, but You've probably only seen like half of an episode.
They kept moving it around the Nickelodeon schedule.
Yeah, man. I like this theme song a lot.
Yeah.
It's good.
Great song. Back in the security grotto, it's charades time. And Boimler is getting even more bummed about whatever it is this is going on with the security folks.
Nothing serious is what it is.
Yeah.
Like, the charades is obvious and boring to him.
Swimming in a bucket!
It's Constable Odo from Deep Space Nine.
Mr. Bucket?
Is that just beginner's luck? Like, they're all thinking it's got to be something harder than Odo?
I don't know. Like, my friends who are or were in the military have occasionally shared that, like, you know, you think you enlist because it's going to be a lot of action, but what you don't realize until you get there is that it's so fucking boring. It's boring 99.9% of the time.
Yeah.
Punctuated by terror, but the rest of the time it's boring and smelly. And this is like the experience that Boimler's having.
This is why we thank people for their service, you know?
Yeah.
They put their psyches on the line for boring and smelly.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't do it.
So these secret agent ladies now take the bridge, and Captain Freeman thinks that the bridge officers are going to be some kind of match for them, but of course they are not.
They get their asses absolutely kicked. This has got to make Freeman feel pretty bad, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you feel bad? There's only three of them.
I mean, it's a different story when the security team shows up, but like, you'd think that like other people in Starfleet would be as good at fighting, you know, like everybody in Star Trek, like Guinan was like an expert marksman.
Yeah. But like on those occasions that alien forces took over the D from the bridge.
Yeah.
Those bridge officers often got their asses kicked.
Suck, yeah.
This is an homage to that, isn't it?
I guess so. Yeah.
What sucks about what happens after the Cerritos Bridge is taken over is that it's steered into the neutral zone, because evidently that's a shortcut to the Betazoid homeworld.
Fastest way to the Betazoid homeworld is right through Romulan space.
How could you be an intelligence officer and still think this is a good idea?
Still think that this is the best way to avoid being imprisoned?
They must think that this is a safer route than hanging it out there for that mystery ship to destroy, right?
Yeah, I mean, Romulans are the devil you know, I guess.
And a Romulan ship has already been destroyed by this mystery ship, so maybe you could talk your way through the neutral zone like that.
Yeah. Mystery ship right behind us. You better run.
Yeah, yeah. I swear, officer.
The Cerritos puts on a t-shirt that says, "If you see me running, try to keep up."
Yeah. Back with the crew, Dr. Katz gets Mariner and Teal'c free from their hostage-style tie-up, and the tricorder on the ground near them has a surprising thing to report, that Teal'c is the cause of this psychosis.
She has Bendai syndrome, which is what Sarek had in that episode where he was dressed like bathrobe Batman.
I will not be spoken to in this manner!
It's kind of an interesting comment on the repetition of similar storylines in TNG.
Yeah.
And in Deep Space Nine, like, they really did kind of recycle that.
Yeah. So this is the actual situation. They need to get up to the bridge to tell everybody about what's really going on, what's causing everybody to go crazy. Freeman is up on the bridge with the secret agent Womans.
There's a Zoid who leads a life of danger. She reads your mind, and then she stays a stranger.
But Freeman manages to punch
you in. You almost got a complete lyric.
I wouldn't say I even almost got there. Freeman managed to trigger the red alert, which like is happening right as Boimler is boiling over, getting angry at all the security people. So the security people leap into action, arm themselves, and I love how excited Boimler gets at the reveal of different sizes of phaser.
This is what he's always wanted. This is like the scene in Backdraft where like the firehouse finally gets a call and you get to go out with him.
I kind of wanted the button on the joke to be that there were also the like key fob phasers though. Like, remember early TNG, some people had ones that were just like little tiny guys.
Those should just be in a little dish by the door.
Yeah, that's what Boimler should have, you know? Yeah. I don't trust him with a full-size hand phaser.
No, I don't either.
So they start running up to take the ship back to respond to this red alert. Meanwhile, we cut back to Mariner and T-Lin, who have taken refuge in a closet as like most of the crew of the ship that were at that party claw at the door to try and kill them.
I wasn't clear on how mortal the danger was.
They seem like pretty mad at them.
Party or die.
Yeah. I mean, Mariner has to kick the control panel on the door to lock it.
Yeah.
And then she complains that the larger problem that they're dealing with is unkickable.
It is one of those rare types of problems that can't be kicked.
Mm-hmm.
Hate that.
Yeah.
I love like a sound check where you're just like some technological thing isn't working and then you kick it and it works.
Tell me which sound check you're referring to.
Sometimes
I want to kick myself.
I wanted to kick myself after our London show because we didn't ask for wedge monitors on stage and we really needed them.
Yeah, we need them all the time. Got to hear that snare.
You can't hear the fucking drops that we're playing or any of the music or anything.
Yeah.
Without wedge monitors.
Yeah.
Sounds like nothing.
Really need the wedge.
Anyways, we learn a little bit about what the source of Teelan's stress is. This is, many diseases you get because you get stressed. You ever get little like canker sores in your mouth if you're like real stressed out?
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
Is that just me?
Yeah.
What about shingles? You ever get shingles from being too stressed out?
Never had shingles.
Huh. Fuck.
I thought that was just a thing that Terry Bradshaw got and no one else did. Like, he's in commercials and stuff talking about a thing I'd never heard of.
Are you just floating through life not stressed ever?
I am really trying to be that in a way that I think you've noticed over the last year or so. Like, I'm trying to not let it roll off my back, but like pressure wash it off of my back, like through force of will.
Wow.
Sometimes it works.
Yeah, I really need to.
Life is stressful, man.
I need
it
to
sucks.
Pressure wash my stress because it's not doing good things for me. It's not helping.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe part of my deal is just the denial of it. That can't be healthy.
That is now your chair, Captain.
New ship.
There's the scene where security gets to like outside of the bridge and the ship is getting closer to the neutral zone and Shax is trying to convince Dr. Katz to do her de-escalation techniques or something that Maglimo gave them.
Yeah.
I hate those fucking things! Ah!
They don't appear to be working.
No. Now, also not working is the replicator that Maglimo is trying to use to make a bowl of barf soup.
He's got
to
de-escalate himself.
No kidding. I mean, I guess the doctor that prescribes himself medicine has a fool for a patient, but
yeah,
I think Maglimo might need to do some exercises of his own.
Enjoy hell, replicator.
There are some alien cultures in which barf is indistinguishable from soup, right? You just got to get in there, put on a brave face, eat that soup.
It is rather piquant.
It is zesty, isn't it?
Speaking of de-stressing, Mariner really helps Teelan. T-Lin shares her pain and grows stronger from the sharing. And it's because by being vulnerable about how much she's been trying to get off the ship and get back in the good graces of the Vulcan High Command gives Mariner an opportunity to give her some, you know, some nice compliments about how Vulcan-y she is, how uptight and up her own butt she is.
Thank you, Mariner. I believe I needed to hear that.
And if her captain can't recognize that, he's an idiot.
Yeah, it's nice. You see T-Len's fists unclench.
Mm-hmm.
You see her shoulders drop a little bit.
Yeah.
And suddenly,
it's a good feeling.
Bendai syndrome is not affecting everybody on the ship.
You can just, through force of will, get over Bendai syndrome.
I wish that was true of shingles.
Yeah. Doesn't seem to be the case.
No.
This is Sick Boy's room. Not a week's gone by hasn't come down with some sort of ailment. Shingles, hepatitis, crabs. That was his fault.
So they stop the ship just in time. Like, security gets on board the bridge and variously beats up and disables the BIA officers. That the bridge crew was no match for them, but it is very easy for the security team to whoop the three of these ladies' asses.
Right, because Teeland's psychosis is no longer an issue for the crew. Like, that's gone. And it never really was an issue for the security folks because they were just buried deep down in their security grotto.
Yeah.
Like, the proximity effect of what Teeland was projecting wasn't as apparent to them.
I admire how much control Freeman had over what was in the part of her mind that was getting read, because there's like a Real Housewives of Beta Z level spat that erupts between two of these secret agents when Freeman shows her a memory of...
She's got it together to like mentally poison pill the telepathy between them in a really great way.
Mad respect to Freeman for that. I don't think I have that much control over what I'm thinking about.
Freeman's great. Good Freeman episode.
Good Freeman episode. They stop the ship just in time and pull a U-turn. I loved the reveal that there was a cloaked Romulan ship. I was just like watching the episode thinking to myself, it would be so hilarious if they pull away and a ship decloaks right there.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it did. All the Romulans inside the ship are so disappointed.
Okay, enough.
Those Romulan double Ds, baby.
Yeah.
Great looking.
Yeah. I'm glad that they haven't switched to only side-turned Romulan ships.
Yeah. Yeah. Make them wide.
Make them wide.
Those wide kings.
So the Cerritos arrives at Risa. We don't get to see the surface at all, which I was a little sad about. But
their capacity for partying is so... I mean, it makes me tired to think about a three-week vacation followed by a Risa vacation.
Yeah. These are women of a certain age drinking Ritas by the yard.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a vibe, man.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
I'm very good at drinking slushy beverages.
You really are.
And I admire them. It's like a mixture of horror and admiration, I would say.
Just like most of our reviews.
So Boimler has kind of a checkout talk with Shax about like, what was all that, man? And turns out that this was Shax's attempt to help Boimler with his stress.
Mm-hmm.
Shax just thought Boimler needed to cut loose, relax, do something that wasn't work for a little bit. And this whole thing was security trying to protect his emotional well-being, man.
Was this security theater, or is this what the security department does all the time?
I think what Shax is saying is that, like, a lot of the time, this is what they're thinking about as security.
What did you think? We just sat around all day practicing phasering people?
It's pretty great.
I don't think Worf was thinking like this.
No. Not at all.
Or Odo, for that matter. Or Tuvok. Like, Shax is kind of a unique one for this.
I think more puzzle time would have helped Worf be a better father. That's for sure. Finally, Freeman escorts the Loxanas back to the transporter room.
Yeah. I was surprised they let her off the hook for this telepathic racism, not being able to tell one telepathic disease from another.
It's fine. It's fine, I guess. Not a big deal.
Yeah. Just like they're willing to let the Dr. Katz's eating them in the past be water under the bridge. They're willing to...
A lot of grace shown here. It's nice.
It's really impressive by the Loxanas. And they're like, hey, sorry about all the confusion. Sorry about, spin kicking as many of your crew as we did. Here's a blurry picture of that ship that's been killing everybody as a little parting gift, which I feel like is great for Freeman, right? Gives her a real, if she's the one that solves this problem, like Starfleet's going to fucking love her.
Yeah. Once they can communicate again, that's going to be important.
Yeah. And it turns out they can. We get a little hang in the bar at the end with Mariner and Teeland, and Teeland has decided not to send that letter.
No. She can always send it later.
Nothing's stopping her.
No. This makes Mariner and Tendi very happy because it would appear as though she's going to remain on the ship for quite a while.
So when Tendi said that Teeland is her best friend, do you think that that's because Tendi thinks everyone is her best friend, or does she actually like Teeland more than she likes Mariner?
To answer that with another question, do you think Tendi is a tragic figure? She seems incapable of forming real friendships with people.
I think she has a real friendship with Rutherford.
If all you do is love everyone around you, is that real? Because it's not like the full spectrum of your feelings and relationships to people that are possible. It's just like that one thing.
I mean, I guess ask your puppy.
It is puppy enthusiasm, yeah. And that is very real. Good answer. All right.
Yeah, I don't consider her to be a tragic figure.
Tendi's the puppy of the show. She's and the it totally reframed how I feel about her.
Yeah.
That's fixed now.
It's very interesting how much the button is about Tendi's like friendship thirstiness, though, because it didn't really feel like that's what the episode was about, but that's really the note they end on.
The note we need to end on is whether or not you like the episode, Ben.
She'll always bring it home.
I did like this episode. I think so far this season, this is my favorite episode. I thought the jokes were great. I really liked the Lwaxanas. I liked the world building of there being more than one Lwaxana. I guess, like, I wish we'd gotten their, you know, curriculum vitae, like when Lwaxana rattles off about the sacred chalice of reeks and all that stuff.
That's fun. It's fun every time.
I feel like each one of them should have had one of those. Here's a thing that popped into my head the second time I watched it that I don't really know what to do with, so I'll put it here and maybe people can like reply to the Instagram or something and let us know what they think. There's three very bosomy ladies in this Betazoid trio. One of them has no cleavage line drawn on her. One of them has just a single line, and then one of them has the line that goes up, and then there's the little Y off of it, like the Wonder Bra cleavage. And I wondered, like, at some point in the character design process, they were like, what three kinds of ladies are these going to be, and do they all have the same cleavage, or are we going to do different cleavage on them?
Well, you know how it goes, Ben. In every woman, there are three breasted wolves.
It seemed very intentional, and I wondered if there was some semiotics to that, like what mean the different types of boob that they are repping here. Semiotics of cleavage, an area of inquiry that I'm quite curious about.
That seems like a community college class that I could maybe audit. Yeah. If I find the time.
Like, it seems like a lot of people are auditing this one and not a lot signing up for it. Not a lot of people are actually going to the bookstore and getting the textbook.
Yeah, I think it was a fun episode, Ben, but I think it also suffered from that Star Trek Discovery thing where it told you what its message was pretty emphatically at the end. In a way that I just like to learn my lessons by observation and not like instruction.
You know, to learn your lessons the hard way.
I do, every time. I didn't like that aspect to it, but there was a lot about it that was good and funny outside of that. Yeah. And notably, Rachel Dratch was in this episode, and she is one of my favorite comic performers of any kind, voice or otherwise. And it was just great to hear her voice again doing funny things. She's always been a favorite.
I am not a sanctimonious buzzkill.
Trash rules. I think all three of the Betazoid ladies were kind of famous. I wonder if the voice performers get to weigh in on what the cleavage of their character is going to look like.
I mean, you've got to know that because it affects your performance.
Right. Yeah. Am I going to have the one line? Am I going to have the Wonder Bra like extra line on the... Am I going to have no line? What does that mean?
Exactly.
Because she's stacked. She's got big boobs.
Yeah. We should ask friend of the show, Robert Petkoff, like what effect stuff like that has on a voice performer. I bet he'd know.
Yeah, he'd know for sure.
Well, one thing I know right now is we got to head over to check our priority one messages, Ben.
Yeah, let's see what kind of cleavage we've got in there.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Ben, we got a one-liner in here. It's a personal message.
Okay.
It's from Ryan from Sacktown, and it is to Ben and Adam. That message goes like this. I know this might be a little promotional, but hopefully you'll let it slide. In this P1, I wanted to recommend folks who might be skipping on your Voyager eps in TGG because they didn't like Voyager to give it a go.
Wow.
As an Asian guy, Voyager's Harry Kim bummed me out, but your take on his character has really helped redeem it for me. Thank you, guys.
Hell yeah.
Wow. I like hearing that.
I'm guessing that what Ryan from Sacktown is referring to is our suspicion that Garrett Wong has bought almost every single prop that has ever been auctioned off from that show.
I mean, that bums me out.
Yeah.
And Ryan from Sacktown needs to know that. Yeah.
Thanks for getting a P1, Ryan. Thanks for asking people to listen to our show. Ryan from Sacktown gets a lot of P1s. I appreciate that.
Yeah. If you would like to support the show via P1, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Write a couple words. Write a lot of words. We'll read them on the show. It's a great way to support the production of Greatest Trek and Greatest Generation.
It is. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself an Edward Larkin?
I think it's going to be Dr. Katz drinking a Yardo-Rita right before surgery. Do you think she just blurped a hypo spray into her neck to like negate the Yardo before going in?
I read somewhere one time that synthahol is designed to let you enjoy the feelings of alcohol, but you can also, at a thought, dismiss the intoxicating effects.
Yeah.
Which sort of undercuts that joke.
Mm-hmm.
But I also really liked it, and I was also very impressed that the chug-a-lug goes as fast as it does, because Dr. Katz is like walking out of frame mm-hmm. when she takes that Yardarita to the dome.
Yeah.
And it's gone before she's out of frame.
Time to get to surgery.
Too cold. Too much.
Yeah.
That'd be tough.
Do cats not get ice cream headaches?
God, I don't know.
Maybe that's another aspect of synthahol, is you can dismiss your ice cream headache.
Dr. Katz has a lot of problems. Do you think she's a great medical professional?
No.
I don't think so either. I think she's kind of a liability.
Yeah, I think the reason Dr. Katz is not constantly getting summoned to be the chairwoman of, you know, the medical school at Starfleet Academy, the reason she's not serving on the flagship,
yeah,
the reason she's not Beverly Crusher, not Dr. Pulaski, is that she is kind of bad.
She's got a lot of problems.
Going to really want a second opinion if Dr. Katz is doing the diagnosing.
Ben, who's your Edward Larkin?
Oh, I'm joining you on the Dr. Katz square. That was one of my favorite moments of the episode. I thought it was really funny.
Hey, I love it when we're in agreement. Ben, one thing we've agreed to do at the end of every episode of Greatest Trek is to launch a warning, boah.
Mm.
It's a way that we recognize the many kind things said about our show out on the internet, and specifically the type of comment that would seek to invite new FODs into the fold.
Yeah.
While at the same time repelling those folks who just wouldn't get it, who maybe take Star Trek a little too seriously.
Or don't like it for some reason.
Or don't like us.
What the fuck is wrong with them?
Yeah, I don't know.
We don't need them.
Prepare a buoy and launch it when ready.
Warning buoys.
An emergency buoy.
A warning buoy.
I have a warning bois here that I just wanted to read for a timely reason. This was a 5-star review left on Apple Podcasts, London version.
Whoa. Okay.
So we couldn't even see this.
Yeah, because we're region locked to US version.
The writer made sure to send it into Bill Tilly to make sure that we saw it.
Okay.
I did see it. I thought it was great. It was about the show in London, and I thought I'd read it because it's fun.
Amazing.
Headline nipple signatures, 5-star review. A week ago, after a t-shirt choice crisis, Major League Domjot won, a mate and I consumed Korean barbecue, drank a few porch beers, and saw your Share Your Embarrassment tour at the London Podcast Festival. The guys didn't disappoint. The pod is great, but the live show is the greatest.
Wow.
Thanks to Adam and Ben for the show and for putting up with me losing any semblance of cool when they emerged from the green room after the show to have me push my mate in front of them twice. The first time to demand that they look at his cool t-shirt, a clockwork jack-off machine number he designed himself. The second time to demand that they sign it on the nipples, obviously. They were seemingly happy to do it and put up with multiple handshakes from someone who now feels a little bit embarrassed about how they behaved in front of a couple of people, a bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. Adam, Ben, Wendy, and Bill, I salute you. You are truly the greatest.
Well, thank you, reviewer. That is super nice of you to say. You shouldn't feel embarrassed. We had a great time hanging out with you and your mate.
Pretty fun to push open the door of the backstage area and just be like sieged.
It was so fun and cool.
Yeah. Felt great to sign everything shoved in front of us.
The shirts. UK FODs were a delight, and it was so cool to get to do that.
Yeah, definitely want to go back to London. Won't be the last you see of us.
Inshallah. Well, thanks to everyone who leaves a nice review or posts online about the show. Helps us get the word out, and maybe you'll hear your words coming out of our mouths on a future segment of Warning Boys. That is it for today's episode of this Greatest Trek that we're recording on the road during our tour. If you haven't got tickets to the Share Your Embarrassment tour yet, go to greatestgentour.com. We're reviewing Star Trek V. It's really fun. Don't just take our word for it. The reviews are in. People in the UK liked it.
Yeah.
They hate everything.
Yeah, that felt good. We won them over.
Yeah, yeah.
So. We've got a special relationship with London FODs.
So go get a ticket, and maybe you'll hear a little something about next week's episode in the credits, which will start playing very shortly.
Take it away, Wendy.
Greatest Trek is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica, and it's produced and edited by Wendy Pretty. Next Friday, Ben and Adam will be back to talk about Lower Decks Season 4, Episode 6, which is titled Parth Ferengi's Heart Place. At the end of every episode, we want to thank all the folks who help make this show possible. Most importantly, the MaxFun members who support on a monthly basis. Members get access to the entire back catalog of bonus content, as well as new bonus episodes being released each month. It's easy to set it up at MaximumFun.org/join, and we really appreciate everyone who does that. We also want to thank Adam Ragusea, who composed all of the original music that you hear on this show. You can check out his YouTube cooking channel and podcast by searching for Adam Ragusea. Thanks to Nick Ditmore for creating the show art, and thanks to Bill Tilley for managing the At Greatest Trek social media pages on Instagram, Threads, Twitter, and Mastodon. Follow those accounts and use the hashtag GreatestTrek to connect with other friends of DeSoto online. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Greatest Trek.
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network.
Of artists-owned shows.
Supported.
Directly.
By you.